You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the office of XML Financial Group. This is your host, Herb Cohn, with my co-host, Rob Kanner from XML Financial Group. We've got a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Remy Butchko, CEO of Georgetown Insurance, Bob Corlett, President of Staffing Advisors, Andy Powell, Managing Partner, Holt Buzis and Powell, and Jim Hawkins, Managing Director of Focus Investment Banking. Let's get to know our first guest first. Remy Butchko, CEO of Georgetown Insurance. Remy, what is Georgetown Insurance? What are you guys doing?
We are an independent insurance agency.
Mm-hmm. So an independent insurance agency. So are you servicing businesses or individuals?
Both. Primarily business, but we also do personal insurance as well.
So you're a business that helps people as well as businesses get covered for property and casualty insurance in case of disasters and that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. And how large or how small is this business?
We have 26 licensed agents and approximately 1,400 business insurance customers.
Mm-hmm. And how old is the business?
This is actually our 40th year in business.
So it's 40 years. And how young were you when you started working in this business?
It was a family business. It was in the basement of the house growing up, so started pretty young, probably about 10 years old, just helping out.
So you didn't start off as the president of this thing. You started helping out. And when you said you started helping out, what were you helping out doing?
File clerk type stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that was working with your mom and dad, I guess?
Yeah, it was in the basement.
Uh-huh. And what was the next step in your helping out mom and dad?
Just stayed with the business, and we did what we needed to do because it was kind of a survival mode at the time. So
mom and dad started this business, and the household income was dependent on it, and you guys had to make it work. So it was a matter of selling and making sure you're servicing customers and keeping customers around, and you got involved with a little bit of everything, didn't you?
Absolutely. We did what we had to do to help dad out because he was out bringing in the bacon. So.
Mm-hmm. And I understand a number of years ago you got involved and you actually took over the business as the CEO. And how many years ago was that?
It was June of 2000.
So June of 2000, you took over the business and as the CEO. And I understand you had a philosophy in the business that was a little different than most businesses. Why don't you tell us that philosophy about how you were going to run your business?
Well, the philosophy changed a little bit over time, Herb. Started out, I really wanted to be driven, have a performance-based culture, and as I grew up a little bit, I realized that that was not the people that we had on board, and we had a very strong, loyal employee base, and I kind of changed things around and decided I would, instead of swimming against the tide with that, I would embrace it.
What do you mean you were going to embrace it? What are you talking about?
Well, you read the business books and you have all the speak and everything's about performance and it's either perform or get chopped. And I just decided that wasn't the right way for us.
Interesting. And so as opposed to firing people, you would try to like realign their jobs and stuff like that?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about that. What do you mean?
Well, you can have good people in the wrong positions, and I think a lot of people have read Good to Great, and it's about getting the right people on the bus mm-hmm. and then getting the people in the right seats. So started to spend more time mm-hmm. trying to do that and treating people that were treating us right, treating them right. So
interesting. How interesting. And you told me about a year or so ago you got a a little bit of a medical scare. What was that?
Yeah, I had a little bit of a curveball. Ironically, I applied for life insurance and ended up finding out that I had colorectal cancer.
Really?
A little less than a year ago, yeah.
What happened?
Applied for some life insurance. Blood work came back mm-hmm. all screwed up, mm-hmm. and they said some bad news for you.
So you went through some treatment for that, and what was the result of that treatment?
Well, the result is I found out a couple weeks ago that I'm cancer-free, which is mm-hmm. fantastic.
So this is a small business, and it's a pretty competitive business where, the customers know lots of different insurance agents, and the staff, trained staff, they have plenty of places they can go for jobs, and the carriers, they don't care who writes the business, whatever agent's going to bring them the business, that's where they're going to take the business from. This is a perfect recipe for disaster, for mutiny, and for people stealing your clients, and for the clients that are going elsewhere. I guess the business blew all apart, didn't it?
No, we actually had it ended up being 2016 ended up being the best year we've had top line and bottom line.
No, wait. Hold on for a minute. You told me that 2016 that you were out of the business for a lot of the time because you were really taking care of your medical condition. In fact, you spent a lot less time involved in the business this past year than in any previous year, correct?
That's correct.
So I'm trying to figure out why the competition didn't steal your clients, why the underwriters didn't steal your clients, why the staff didn't leave.
I don't know. I guess I found out that I'm not as important as I thought I was, Herb.
What did it have to do with that, the way you were realigning things and the loyalty you were developing?
I got to tell you, when I had to step back for a little bit, everybody rallied around the business and rallied around me and my family.
What are you talking about?
Who
rallied around you? What do you mean?
Our clients, the employees of the company, everybody. Really, it was eye opening and it was very appreciative.
So. Uh-huh. So, what's the message you have for other leaders?
I would say my message is don't get too caught up in win. Loyalty does still count. So,
you're telling me that you spend less time in the business and things didn't fall apart, and the competitors didn't try to steal your clients and the people didn't leave. Tell us more about some of the specifics that happened.
We definitely, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to say my competition was gentle on us by any stretch.
Yeah.
They saw the some of them were out there and they saw the wounded fish and the sharks came out. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. They weren't all gentle.
Yeah. But who pulled behind you and what happened and why was that happening?
Our clients really pulled behind me. I mean, they said, you know what, take care of yourself, do what you have to do, and just get back to us when you're better and you're ready.
So your clients told you that. I guess that's because your staff told you that.
I think there's a little bit of trickle down with that, Herb. I think that's pretty aligned that that we have a loyal, like I mentioned, the loyalty-based culture, and I think that we have loyalty-based clients as well. I think that flows through and aligns.
That's sort of interesting. How do you feel about all that? How do you feel about what you learned about yourself? What did you learn from your having cancer? What did cancer teach you?
Not to give up. It was there were definitely some trying days and trying times, and it was just appreciative to have the people and the strong arms around me that I had. Don't know that I got through it on my own. So,
your mom and dad were involved in the business previously. When you found out that you were needed to go through some treatment, did you ask them to get re-involved in the business?
No, I didn't. We spent a lot of time trying to get through our perpetuation with the business, and I actually asked them to not get back involved.
Why would that be, though? I mean, they're your parents. You know that they got your best interests at heart. Why wouldn't you want them getting involved with the business?
Well, I think every business, particularly a family business and a generational business, is that you have to get to the point where you have to let the next generation take over. And I felt already got over the hump with that, and I didn't want to take – I thought it might be a step backwards.
So you had faith in your people. You had faith in your team.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You had a sense that that everybody was aligned correctly and that they were loyal and trustworthy, and why rock the ship?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So now that you're going back to work recently, I guess.
Yeah, I mean it's I wouldn't say I'm 100% right now. Like I said, it's only been a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's actually a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to getting back into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I love to do.
Mm-hmm. How has your outlook changed towards your employees and business?
Boy, that's a tough question. But I am very appreciative of everything they've done. Obviously, I hope they don't have to walk a mile in these shoes, and I don't have the opportunity to do for them what they did for me. But I'm certainly there for them as they were for me. So,
What's the atmosphere in the office like nowadays?
It's good. It's very upbeat. I think for the most part, people are glad to have me back. You think the comment has been it wasn't as fun around here without you. So I guess I'm the cheerleader. So
they want you back, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you've had a pretty heavy duty learning experience the last 12 months.
Well, there's definitely a lot of time for introspection.
Mm-hmm. What's the website address for this organization known as Georgetown Insurance?
It's GeorgetownINS.com, like short for Georgetown Insurance.
GeorgetownINS.com. And this is a business that's 40 years old. Well, you ended up finding out that by trying to keep people around and by realigning what they were doing so they played to their strengths, the business could succeed. And then when you had to step back because of a medical condition, you tell me you had your best year in terms of revenue and profits. That's fascinating. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. And we will be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Rob Cantor, XML Financial Group. We'd like to introduce Bob Corlett, President of Staffing Advisors. Bob, what is Staffing Advisors? What are you doing?
We're an executive search firm, primarily helping associations and nonprofits.
And how large or how small is this organization?
We did about 100 searches last year.
Uh-huh. And what kind of organizations do you help?
Associations and nonprofits.
Associations and nonprofits. All right. Where are you from originally?
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And how many brothers and sisters?
I am the youngest of seven.
You're the youngest of seven. What was the effect of growing up the youngest of seven?
You're the idiot in the family when you're youngest. You're last to tie your shoes, last to ride a bike.
Didn't you tell me that the real effect it had on you was that you had a hunger to be listened to? Isn't that the truth?
Well, you had to have something interesting to say or you got no airtime.
Uh-huh. And so you had this hunger to be listened to. And when you were younger, you told me that you had a part-time job working in a supermarket and doing some stuff on a truck. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So I worked for one of the best managers of my life when I was 16, which is an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. And we would have this intense competition with other stores in the chain, mm-hmm, of who could unload the truck fastest.
What did that teach you? What did you learn from that?
It was a masterful leadership lesson. The manager had us really want to work really hard, so we would punch out and go off the clock, and he'd save labor costs. Mm-hmm. But it was a grand competition. It was like sports. So at work for $3.25 an hour.
So you learned about good management, unloading that truck at the supermarket. And nowadays, you told me there's a certain feeling you get when you're able to help a client do something. Tell us a little bit about that.
So that was a manager who made work feel important and fun for a bunch of 16-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the importance of work and the honor of doing a good job, the mm-hmm respect for a job well done, is something I've carried with me ever since.
The respect for a job well done. Didn't you tell me that something's like magic or something like that? What was that all about?
When the right leader is with the right team and doing work that everybody finds meaningful, it's not work, it's magic. It's in the flow, it feels great.
How are you able to help affect that? Tell us about that.
So one of the things we try to do with our clients is really understand the drivers, what makes a team work, what makes the whole thing come together so the whole team can feel respected and valued and do important work.
Isn't it all the same? I mean, isn't every team the same?
Every team is different. There's no two jobs that are the same. You could have the same title, but the CFO of Exxon and the CFO of Greenpeace, that's a different job.
So you're telling me, even if they were in the same industry,
even in the same industry, every job's a snowflake and every person's a snowflake. They're all
different.
Match,
yeah. So what you try to do is get involved in understanding what's really needed and what the real match needs. Tell me more about that.
There's in any given job, there's four or five key drivers that make all the difference.
What are you and talking about? What are the drivers? What do you mean?
So if you know how to, there's four or five things in any given job that you have to be really good at.
Yeah.
And there's 20 different things you could be mediocre at and you'd be fine. And there's a value system match to, you have to fit into the company. And I've been the misfit toy at a lot of companies saying, why don't we think about this? And they say, shut up.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that it's not what's on the resume necessarily. No. There's a lot of other factors.
Yeah.
So what you try to do is get involved with the organization, understand all that soft stuff.
Well, there's soft stuff, and there's also you have to be good at certain skills to drive impact.
Huh.
And people talk about a laundry list of 20 things, and most of it doesn't matter.
That's interesting. You also mentioned earlier that you got involved with doing morning devotionals. What's a morning devotional?
So my dad had Bible study, basically, morning devotions every morning before school for 7 kids. He came up with a unique lesson plan every morning, 5 days a week.
Tell us more about that. What do you mean?
So every morning we'd memorize a Bible passage, or he'd tell an inspirational story from Tarbell's. So I grew up at the breakfast table learning about how JCPenney went bankrupt a couple of times before he founded JCPenney's because he wouldn't pay bribes in previous companies. Or, you know, Colonel Sanders, failed at everything until he was in his 60s. And so we grew up with business stories and Bible and inspirational stories of living a life that was in integrity.
So this was discussed at the breakfast table every morning.
Every morning.
With you and your siblings and dad.
And then my dad went on to teach Sunday school on Sunday. So 6 lessons a week he would come up with.
How did all that stuff affect you?
Well, it gets right to your core. So my brothers and sisters, you know, practice all kinds of different religious practices at this point.
Yeah.
But at its core is, you know, what does life expect of you? Not what do you expect of life.
Tell us more about that. What do you mean?
So it's Viktor Frankl is the guy who, that's his phrase. But there are things that you do that gives meaning to, there's things you do at work that give meaning to your life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my brothers and sisters are, you know, they teach college, they do all kinds of different things.
Wait. There's things you do at work to give meaning to your life.
Work has meaning. It has value. You get something from work. The dignity and respect of a job well done matters.
Huh.
And so sometimes, you know, you can look at a job and say, oh, that's nothing. That's just a receptionist, but it matters.
So when you're helping one of your clients find the right person, you're actually trying to make sure that person that gets put into that position finds meaning in their life from what they're going to be doing at that job?
Yeah, absolutely. And the sneaky underlying part of what we do is, after half an hour talking about a job with us, you have a bigger respect for what that work is and a bigger respect for who should be in that job.
And you picked this up from doing morning devotionals around the breakfast table.
And mowing lawns and, you know, delivering papers. And there's a dignity in a job well done. And
there's a dignity in a job
no matter
well
what
done.
The job is.
Huh. So as opposed to work being work, it's not that work is fun or work is play. Work's dignity?
Work can be all of those things.
Huh.
But at its heart, if you respect the work,
mm-hmm.
you get people who respect the work.
So the people that you place in these gigs, after you understand what's really going on in that company, do they tend to stick around longer?
Yeah, we have actually a ridiculously long replacement guarantee because we pay a lot of attention to why people take jobs and why they stay in them.
So when you talk with your employers, one of the ways that you show them you got some skin in the game is you give them a replacement guarantee, which means that if it doesn't work, you got to go do it all again, so it's really in your best interest to nail it the first time.
We extended our guarantee from 12 months to 18 months 2 years ago. And we went back and calculated the net cost of that in 2 years was $2,500 to my company.
Wow. So you're telling me you've gone ahead and you've offered an extended guarantee that's beyond what most in the industry, what 99% offer.
Yep.
And you're telling me you may have had one little hiccup, but that's like nothing compared to the number of people you place. That's amazing. It's amazing to me, you know, what's happened around the breakfast table, the culture that was created amongst your brothers and sisters, what your dad tried to imbue into you guys, and how it's manifest in terms of you running the staffing agency. What's the website address for this organization for staffing advisors?
Staffingadvisors.com.
Staffingadvisors.com. And your name is Bob Corlett. And your primary clients are, again, who are they?
Associations, nonprofits, and growing companies.
How interesting. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, executiveleadersradio.com. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Rob Kanner, XML Financial Group. We'd like to introduce Andy Powell, who's managing partner of Holt, Boozus, and Powell. Andy, what is Holt, Boozus, and Powell?
We're a certified public accounting firm and management consultants.
Interesting. And how large or how small is this organization?
We have 45 staff and two offices.
45 staff, two offices, and you're the managing partner of the firm?
Correct.
All right. Where are you from originally?
I'm from the Washington, D.C. area. Lived in Maryland all my life.
Okay. And how many brothers and sisters you got?
I have one younger sister, Christine.
One younger sister. And how were you guys different as kids?
She was more of the quiet type. She'd kind of follow me around, want to be my shadow.
Uh-huh. So you were more outgoing, you mean?
Yes, I would go see, find things, do things, yes.
Uh-huh. So give us an idea of how young were you when you started making money?
I was probably about 10 years old. I had my own paper route, delivered the Washington Star.
You had your own newspaper route, and so tell us, what'd that develop into?
I went from serving the paper to my customers to helping them with yard work, clearing bushes, mowing the grass, doing other odd jobs around their houses.
That's interesting. So as opposed to just throwing the newspaper and making it in, and making sure that when it rained they got a wet newspaper, you really got to know your clients.
Right. I didn't make sure they had a wet newspaper. If I did that, I'd get no tip. And tips were important when you deliver newspapers.
So you really know about servicing your clients. You knew about it from 9 or 10 years old. Otherwise,
right,
they wouldn't have asked you to get involved with yard work and doing all the other stuff.
Correct. I mean, if I wanted to make some more money and have money in my pocket, I had to figure other ways to service them.
Well, it's interesting. Most kids, you know, they had a newspaper route, and then they ended up working at a car wash or doing or finding other jobs. But it doesn't sound to me like you had a bunch of other jobs. It sounded to me like you capitalized on servicing your clients. As you know, and that's why they ask you to do the yard work and so on and so forth.
Right.
I'm wondering, why did your partners ask you to be the managing partner of the accounting firm?
They could see that I was very dependable, that I would make sure things happened. Uh-huh. I wouldn't, to a degree, take no for an answer.
And
we had to keep moving things forward.
And didn't you tell me that even though you expected to bring in a certain amount of business, it ended up being five times what you expected to bring in?
Yes. When I first started at the firm, I came in as a manager, and I said I'd have about $50,000 worth of business.
What happened?
After the first year, I had about $250,000 worth of business, and they offered me to come on as a partner at that point in time.
So, evidently, your experience delivering newspapers, which then turned into yard work, has something to do with your ability to take $50,000 of accounting work and turn it into $250,000 of accounting work because you know how to service your clients.
Right. That's uh-huh. a motto of our firm, is basically we need our clients more than they need us. So we have to make sure we learn how to service them and service them well.
That's the motto of the firm?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So maybe what you did is just jack your prices up so all your clients would leave. Do you have clients that have been with you for an extended period of time?
Yes, I have a number of clients that have been with me over 15 years.
So I guess it's not because you're beating them up with price. I guess you're really servicing your clients and they're referring more clients to you.
Correct. We want to get to know our clients. I mean, we want them to call us, even if it's not a matter of accounting. If they want us to wash the windows, no, we'd like them to call us so we can give a referral. It's more about than just the accounting.
But that takes time. I mean, if somebody has a death in the family or a tragedy, their daughter's getting married or something's happening and they're looking to buy a car, do you want them to really bother you with that kind of stuff?
Yes. Because it's more accounting and us, it's more than just the numbers. It's a relationship. We need to make sure that we know what's going on in their life, how to help them to do the accounting and the taxes that we do for them.
Wait a minute. You're telling me if you get to know them and what's going on in their life, maybe something will come up in the conversation that may not have come up in a typical formalized tax planning session?
That's correct. They might be saying that, hey, we're going to go buy a house or we're looking to move out of the state. So there's all sorts of other things that happen in their lives that we want to know about.
Well, I guess that gives you a chance to send them a bill for that extra time, right?
No. In some cases, yes. But for the most part, it's just to understand what's going on so that we can service them better.
How about that? That's fascinating. The fact that The fact that you're really interested in, do you ever go to weddings and bar mitzvahs and funerals and stuff like that?
I have gone to a number of those for my clients, yes.
Isn't that terrible, though? You have to go out on the weekends and stuff. That's not enjoyable.
No, that's part of having that relationship and making sure things are done the way they're supposed to be done.
Do you have personal relationships with your clients?
Yes, a number of personal relationships. Some of them are probably my best friends.
Really? Do you get to know their husbands and wives and kids?
Yes. I'll know almost the whole family, yes.
And do they get to know your family and stuff like that?
Yes, they do. And I'll know their relatives as well, brothers, sisters, in-laws, all of those types of things.
Huh. But isn't there a separation between business and personal?
There is. There's a line, and we make sure we don't cross that line.
So do you work weekends?
I do. I work many weekends and evenings.
And you sort of enjoy that?
That's part of what I've done my entire career.
Tell us about your philosophy in terms of building the team internally.
Basically, at our firm, we tell our staff that this is a career they chose and that we're here to help them and to guide them. We want to know what they want to accomplish and where they want to go, and we give them the tools to be able to do that.
So you don't tell your people what you want them to do?
No, we don't. No, we don't. They want to do a career in accounting or taxes, and we help them in that process.
How about that? Rob, you have a question?
Your culture of servicing, was that always that way, or did you really implement that when you came on?
It's Steve, one of the other partners. It was his philosophy as well, and I think that's why I came in, and it was so good, the relationship, the partnership, so good, because we have the same philosophy.
Huh. Are you married or single?
I'm married.
How many kids?
Have two kids, two boys.
What's the similarity between being a dad and being the managing partner of Holt, Boozus, and Powell?
You have to guide them. You have to guide them through life, give them an example, make sure they see what's right, they get to learn, make some mistakes, but you let them do that, and then you're there to support them and to guide them the next time around.
What? Guide? I thought that at work, if somebody's not doing their job, you fire them. And with your kids, if they don't do what you want, you cut off their allowance or something, or take the car away.
We've done that many times, where we've taken the car away or the cell phone away, just to prove a point. But at the end of the day, you really have to guide them and show them what's right and what should be done and how you should do it.
Huh. How interesting. So you're really involved in the... It sounds like you're a people person as opposed to a numbers guy.
I enjoy talking to people and doing business development more than I like the numbers, but the numbers have to be done as well.
Well, it sounds to me like you were doing the business development piece of this thing when you were delivering newspapers and somebody asked you to, you know, get involved with the ARC. Did more than one person that you were delivering newspapers to ask you to give them a hand?
Yes. I probably had two dozen people that were having me do odd jobs, yard work around their houses.
You said you were doing it to make some extra money. What was the driver to make the money? What was there something out there you wanted?
Yes. It would be a special toy, or it would be able to go get ice cream or candy up at the local drugstore or whatever. So, yeah, there were reasons that I was trying to do that.
Robert, you have a question?
2 dozen different newspaper customers ask you to help with something else.
Yes.
What did they see?
They saw that I was going to get it done, that I was dependable. I made sure that if I said I was going to do it on a certain day, I made it happen on that day. And that I would do a good job. That was what I wanted to make sure.
And he was 10 years old.
So that business development you were doing, that wasn't schmoozing. That was showing up.
Yes, it was being there. That's correct.
Wait a minute. What's the difference between schmoozing and being there? What are you guys talking about? What do you mean?
Anybody can tell you or say, I'll do this or I'll do that, but there has to be a promise behind it. There has to be something to stand behind to say that you're actually going to do it and you do it. So you can't just smooth somebody. They'll see through that.
So when you started this newspaper route and these people asked you, these dozen people or so asked you to give them a hand with doing yard work or whatever, did they ever ask you to do anything else, or was that the end of it?
That was pretty much the end of it, until I gave up my paper route and moved on to other things.
And what did you move on to?
I started doing accounting work.
How young were you when you started doing accounting related
14 work? Or 15.
What did you do different than the other kids that had that job?
I made sure that I got it done. I got it done well.
Did other kids have that job?
No, they didn't have
that okay. job. Okay, so why were you hired to do a gig that most adults were doing? Why did they hire a 15-year-old kid to do it?
Because they saw that I was responsible and I would make sure that I got done what I'd said I'd get done.
Same thing as what happened with delivering newspapers, and the newspaper route expanded into doing yard work with a dozen clients. It sounds like same game, same kind of personality trait with the accounting firm and building out the accounting firm. So is the driver to make all the money? Is that what it is?
No,
It's
to service the clients.
What's the website address of this organization?
It's CPAs4YOU.com.
Let me have that one more time.
CPAs4YOU.com.
We've been speaking with Andy Powell, managing partner of Holt, Bouzas & Powell here on Executive Leaders Radio. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Rob Kanner, XML Financial Group, and we'd like to introduce Jim Hawkins, Managing Director, Focus Investment Banking. Jim, what is Focus Investment Banking?
We are, in a technical sense, a sub-mid-market investment bank that specializes in mergers and acquisitions. That's maybe a technical way to say that we buy and sell companies between $10 and $300 million.
And you have a specialty in the firm. What is your specialty in this investment banking firm?
I'm actually trained as a scientist. I have a PhD in molecular biology, and I built a number of biotech companies in the life science space. So when my fellow managing directors describe what I do, they say, well, he does the life science stuff.
The life science stuff. So you were the CEO of a number of life science related businesses, and so I guess you understand about how to help them buy and sell and raise money and do all that kind of stuff, huh?
I think all of those things are involved in what I do. In Focus, I specialize just on buying and selling, which is particular to one small part of life sciences, those companies that have achieved revenue and profitability. Mm-hmm. A lot of the other companies that are in this space, though, are in the process of growing. So they are, as a technical term of art, they're pre-revenue, which means they have to raise a lot of money, as you suggest, and they have to be able to take on a tremendous amount of risk for investors to ultimately produce a product from an idea.
Interesting. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Canada near Toronto.
Mm-hmm. How about your parents? What kind of effect did your parents have on you?
Well, I guess I'm very lucky in that regard. Both my parents were very loving parents and were very interested that I should succeed at whatever I did. And in that regard, I got unlimited support, I suppose. Kind of parents that we all would like to have.
So you got a lot of love at home.
I would say, yeah. I would characterize it a particular way. It was certainly unconditional love, which I think those of us who've received that at some point in our lives understand is very special. On the other hand, I think my parents were, as everybody who has spoken here, they had standards, they had expectations, and they had a particular way to encouraging you to succeed.
So mom and dad, you mentioned to when we were talking earlier in the green room, you mentioned to me not what mom and dad did for a living, but the fact that mom was from Scotland and dad was from England, and it sounded to me like the way you were presenting them and the way you were judging them was not based on where they were from, not what they did, but where they were from and who they were. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I think, as everybody has said here, I had the advantage of parents who had a lot of value placed a lot of value in the work ethic. So there's no question that working and being useful to other people as well as yourself was held in very high esteem. I think also the other thing that was there, though, was the notion of dignity on all labor. And I can remember my mother saying to me one time, I don't care if you dig ditches for your life, you just dig the best ditch that anybody can dig.
Whoa,
and so, I think that's a meaningful kind of perspective on the work ethic.
Wait a minute, so mom was encouraging you to dig ditches?
No, I think there was an expectation that, and this is articulated by my father, my father's view was stand on my shoulders. It was really the immigrant imperative of always improve the next generation. But as I said, my mother's proviso in that is even if you don't achieve certain things, you can achieve a lot just by being the best you can be.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on for a second. You've been the CEO of five biotech companies.
Yes.
Right? And you're telling me on one hand, your mom told you, even if you were going to dig ditches, just make sure you did a good job of it. And your dad told you, you can stand on my shoulders. So it just so happened that you got involved in the biotech industry, but you would have had the same philosophy even if you were digging ditches?
I think that's the case. And like all of us, I think people we meet along the way have a big influence on us. I've been very lucky to run into people. None of the people from my family had any academic background. None ever got a PhD.
This fact that you got unconditional love, I guess that makes you really judgmental and angry and hateful and judgmental on people and pushing people away, right?
I would say, well, that maybe that has that effect on some people. For me, I think it made me a greater risk taker. It was that if I failed at something, my mother once asked me, how's your business doing? And I said, well, I really don't know. It's going to be a big success or a big failure. One or the other, nothing in between. And she said, your father would be proud to hear you say that. And there's an acceptance mm-hmm. in as long as you do your best.
Mm-hmm. How does an engineer become a risk taker?
An engineer, I would make the distinction between a scientist and engineer, but they're very similar in the sense that I think they are detail-oriented and they are very, very thorough in things. But I guess I would qualify the notion of a risk-taker. And a lot of people think, well, a risk-taker is a guy who goes to Las Vegas and puts it all on red or something. And taking risks and gambling are totally different things. And I think people that are good risk-takers are actually quite conservative in what they do. And in my view, take all the stakeholders into account. When you build a company, you have to do well for your investors as well as your employees, and this all conditions how you take risk on.
So as opposed to a business being blood and guts and somebody's got to lose and somebody's got to win, is it fair to say that unconditional love gave you a sense that everybody can win together?
That's very, very perceptive, Herb, and that's exactly the case. And I would say there are a number of different ways you can succeed at things. If there was only one, we'd all do it. That happens to be my view. I was allowed to succeed because other people were willing to make my way. And I would hope that as I interface with people, I would want them to succeed as well. It's as you say, not zero sum to me.
So in order for me to win, you don't have to lose. You don't believe that somebody's got to lose and somebody's got to win. You think everybody can do it together, huh?
No, I believe in the all boats rise with the tide. And if
Excellent.
You make the right environment and you do right things by people, which I think is a theme that has been carried here.
Website addresses?
Focusbankers.com, FOCUSBANKERS.com.
We've been speaking with Jim Hawkins, Managing Director of Focus Investment Banking. As well, we've had the opportunity of speaking with Remy Butchko, CEO of Georgetown Insurance, Bob Corlett, President of Staffing Advisors, Andy Powell, Managing Partner, Holt Moses and Powell, and again, most recently, Jim Hawkins, Managing Director of Focus Investment Banking. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. Thank you for joining us today, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.